the relationship between the elders and the preacher, and talking about, like, what you quoted from the article, and kind of your view on meeting with the elders and the frequency of that. I guess my question is, what practical advice do you have on the preacher who's not serving as an elder, meeting with the elders and being involved with them, but not becoming like a pseudo elder in that sense, or usurping that position?
Well, some of that, I think, depends on what's maybe going on at the time with the congregation. I think there are times, like if you're talking about, say, the Bible study program, I think the preacher needs to have a lot of input into that. If there are some, I'm searching for a term, if there's some issues going on in the congregation, I think the elders and the preacher need to make sure they're pretty close together. One preacher that's the vintage of us older people, and I'm not going to mention his name because most of them know him, I asked him one day, I said, do you meet with the elders? He said, no way. He says, I want to meet with the elders if we want to talk about something about me. I'm not that firm about that. I think it's really important that the elders and preacher have close communication. And that probably doesn't answer your question real well. You want to add to that?
What did you say? Ask it again?
Yeah.
I guess. So in like regular communication with the elders in that sense about things that are going on in the congregation, there are things that like I don't personally need to know are happening.
Yeah.
So how can a preacher be involved in that way while not like kind of
with all the details?
Yeah.
If you're talking about somebody about to be divorced, you don't want to be a part of that.
Right.
I think that, you know, maybe the my view about that is the preacher and the elders just need to sort of set some guidelines in that regard, not generally, but in every situation. And sometimes, you know, the elders need the help of the preacher. And within the congregations, you all know, some individuals have more relationship with one elder than the other, more with the preacher than with the elder. So I think it would be hard to have a guideline that could be used in every circumstance. But again, the communication between the preacher and the elders would be important in knowing how we want to deal with a situation. And the fewer people that sometimes know something that's bad in a person's life is better. And in my experience, sometimes the preachers would not know till maybe it was culminating one way or the other. But it's interesting to me in our congregations, we preach against denominations having pastors, and then we make the preacher, making preachers the pastor. So somehow you have to straddle that. I didn't do a really good job with that answer. Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. Bill?
So you mentioned you've worked with 19 elders kind of throughout 45 years. In a lot of ways, like there's a lot of value put in, you know, fully supported evangelists. There's biblical precedent for fully supported elders. Kind of, so what are your thoughts on that? And let's say, hypothetically speaking, a church has less, like you're mentioning, blue collar elders. How do you kind of encourage?
Well, someone? I had a salary of $100,000 a year while I was serving. we have never had any elders supported financially. I've known a few cases. Colin, do you know many cases where elders have been supported?
Only when they were preaching.
Yeah, I'm talking about though, if they're not preaching.
I know of a case or
but
two.
But I think, Bill, as far as I know, they're pretty few and far between. Many years ago, one of the other congregations in town supported the elder a little while. When I retired, and guys, I was 59 when I retired. I had a lot of time in the retirement system, and I wanted to have more time to be as an elder. In fact, some people said to me, well, you should Yeah, I just haven't had any experience with that.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned the relationship between the husband, the elder, and the family, and especially the wife. You know, not long ago, me teaching through 1 Timothy and Titus, somebody asked a question. You know, nothing is mentioned in the in the chapter about the character of the wife.
Right.
So my question is, number one, how much should the congregation be looking at the character of the wife to see if the man is qualified or not, when the scriptures are pretty silent on it? Even though I know some people view 1 Timothy later on when it talks about the deacon's wife. And even just in general, like a lot of times the pressure that starts to mount on a wife because, well, but we're choosing the man.
Yeah.
Yes, the wife comes along, but not the same as is demanded of the wife than of the man. I don't know, what are some of your thoughts on
well,
that?
Well, first of all, through the years, as we have in our congregation appointed additional elders, as the elders discussed that among themselves, sometimes a wife would be included in that discussion. And as I said briefly, and I really want to say more about that, the wife is so essential to the elder. And when it comes right down to it, all of us should have those characteristics as a Christian. You know, maybe that is being too idealistic, but a preacher's wife, elder's wife, shouldn't be any better or any worse than anybody else in the congregation. Maybe worse is not a good part of that. Those characteristics we talked about were just for the husband, except it is interesting to me that the wife of the deacon's mentioned some, but not that. But I think from my standpoint, it's appropriate in that consideration process for a wife to be included. Yes, sir.
Well, I noticed one of the things that you mentioned was that as an elder, when you're faced with being exposed to the congregation in so many ways, there are times where people ask you how you don't exalt yourself.
Yeah.
Because you usually encounter situations that bring you to your knees. And that stood out to me because I see it as there's a need for eldership, especially for my generation as we get older. And so my question is, what are some of the words that you could pass to us to look forward to that humility, to look forward to that humbling process, because it's inevitable. So how do we, what are some of the things, since you've already been on that journey, that you can impart on us to look forward to that humbling process?
Well, okay, to look forward with.
So, because it sounds like as elders, there's a certain charge and a certain responsibility that humbles us. And some of us might stray away from it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I don't want to bear this kind of weight. But some of us, if we feel called to that, what are some of the things that can encourage us?
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna give you a short answer now because that's part of tomorrow. Part of what I'm going to say tomorrow in that regard is God gives us gifts. If you have the ability to do that, and the group you're a part of wants you to do that, then there's kind of an obligation, I think, to do that. Now I say that, and you might say, well, why did you step down as an elder? I realize I'm saying that there's some self-condemnation in that. It's a daunting task, as the expression to use. But I'm going to talk about that some more tomorrow if it's all right. Yes, sir.
I recognize that you mentioned them qualities, not qualifications.
Right.
Some of our index in our Bibles.
Yeah.
Me and the guys, when we were coming up here to Myra, we were talking about qualities of an elder. And one of the things that was mentioned was, if your parents, they become Christians after you've left the house, or rather, you have parents that are Christians already, and you leave the house, you're not a Christian, and you have brothers and sisters that leave the house, or you have a brother, and you all become Christians. Would that be something that is okay for that those two people, the father to become an elder, or does that disqualify him?
Well, that's one of those questions that has lots of answers, and nobody maybe has the exact one. My general reaction to that is I think the congregation just has to work that out for themselves. And it's some of the how strict some people might be in applying those passages, and some would not. And one of the things that happens in churches, particularly where someone becomes a Christian who's hasn't come from a quote Christian background, you get a lot of situations like that. It's not unlike what happens when somebody has been ungodly and maybe divorced and then baptized, and then how people want to react to that as far as even membership is concerned. And I tell you, we've in more recent times that I think is more and more of an issue for us. But my personal reaction to that is that the congregation just has to work that out. And if they're not elders at the time in the congregation, that gets that more difficult. All those kinds of issues are more difficult to resolve. Yes, sir.
Was there a
question? Yes, sir.
Was there a criteria that you used to determine when you shared with your wife information or whatever and not? Was that just a general rule that nothing in the elders' meeting was talked about?
The routine kinds of things you deal with, Bible classes and all that sort of thing. But anything dealing with other members, unless it was made public by the congregation. And again, I'm fortunate she didn't ask. We had to work through that early on, but anything dealing with other members, and particular things that, and what I'd say are in process, you're trying to bring somebody back, and sometimes other people in the congregation don't even know what kind of situation someone's in. So, no, I don't know that we would have had criteria, but we just sort of had an unwritten understanding, and she didn't ask. Am I through?
I think so.
Joe says yes. Thank you all. Guys, it's so heartwarming to be here. Thanks, all.